as everybody out there knows, we've gone through tough, amazing times for as far as the economy goes, and it's tough on businesses, tough on individuals. And I thought it would be good to have the perspective of, you know, let's not just take this lying down. Let's talk to some individuals who are actually being proactive about this business environment, trying to figure out what works in this business environment and sharing some of those ideas and also sharing some success stories. Because, you know, frankly, being part of the media, all we've heard over the past 3 years is how the world is ending. It's terrible. The United States is just going off the deep end, etc. There's got to be something going right out there, at least in my own opinion. And joining me on the program this morning is Paul Whitgay, the founder and CEO of the Alliance of Chief Executives. And Paul's been a guest on this program in the past. And Paul, it's a pleasure to have you back on the program as well.
Thank you very much, Gary.
And you've brought along a guest with you as well. That is Phil Murphy, who's the president and CEO of GNU Group, which is over in Lafayette, California. And Phil, this is your first time on the radio, so I want to welcome you and say it's really not that tough, because if I've survived more than a decade, anybody can do this. So Phil, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Gary.
And Phil, this is your first time on the radio, so I want to welcome you and say it's really not that tough, because if I've survived more than a decade, anybody can do this. So Phil, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Gary.
Now, let's start off first off with Paul and talk a little bit about, you know, first off, the Alliance and what it's about, just to remind our listeners kind of your background and the organization. And then, of course, Phil is part of that as a good example of what's going on. But just give us a refresher course real quick.
Thank you. Yes, the Alliance is very, very simple. We bring CEOs together, people who run companies, and they run companies from virtually every industry, every type of market sector, from small private companies to global billion-dollar enterprises. And we create environments where they can really talk honestly to each other very confidentially about the most challenging strategic issues they have. And Phil's an example of one of our members.
Now, quickly on that subject, of course, we've talked in the past about this, but to remind listeners or for the new listeners, why is it important for CEOs to be able to talk in a situation where, number one, they can be candid, and number two, dealing with peers? Is that difficult for many CEOs to find that type of environment on their own?
Actually, it's not, because at the CEO level, it's rarely easy, and it's almost never clear-cut exactly what the future looks like and what the right direction is. It's always changing out there, new technology, new markets, new competitors. And so to create an environment where they can really talk about where they're going and get outside perspectives, fresh ideas, and actually really get a far greater view of all the things going on there, and that helps them really fine-tune their strategy and gain more confidence that the path they're on is a good one.
Now, the question I have to ask you, of course, is, it's as we all know, it's a tough economic environment in general. Has that made it difficult for an organization such as yours? Are CEOs cutting back in that sense? So in other words, are you seeing your organization dwindle a little bit because CEOs have to, you know, tighten up and just kind of batten down the hatches?
Actually, CEOs have had to deal with some really tough times, but the tough times actually bring them together, because it becomes making the right decisions becomes even more critical in tough times. One bad decision in a downturn can mean the death of the company. In when the tide is rising, you can make a lot of experiments, make some mistakes, and have a little more room for error. But in downturns, they really got to get it right. So they actually brings us together tighter, and I'm pleased to say that the Alliance is growing and doing fine.
So that brings, of course, Phil Murphy into the program, because you're one of those CEOs that are in the Alliance itself. And let's, first of all, Phil, why don't you give some of the listeners an idea of what GNU Group does, because many people may not have heard of you, but I'm thinking most of the people out there have actually seen some of your work.
Thank you, Gary. The GNU Group, or as we call it, the new group, provides services to clients to plan, design, and project manage branding, wayfinding, and sign programs, and our clients are located throughout the United States and internationally.
So when you say that, what is it that you're specifically doing? Because I alluded to the audience that while most people probably have never heard of your company, they've probably seen a lot of your work, and what we're talking about is this whole idea of communication and signage throughout facilities all over the place. Isn't that correct?
That's correct. If you think about it, what we create is that visual layer between the audience and the built environment. So what we're doing is we're welcoming people when they show up at a building. We're helping them navigate in and out throughout that building, and really trying to create a better customer experience for our clients.
Now, a little bit of humor here, hopefully, but so you haven't done any work with like TSA Group, have you?
No.
Okay. I only say that because the experience at the airport is usually not that good as far as communicating back and forth. So the example would be, let's take, for example, like a hospital or a university or any of those types of environments where you have kind of information overload when you get to a place like that, and it can be very confusing and lost. What I'm assuming is that you're working with those type of entities when they will build a new structure or redesign something, and you're helping them to figure out what's going to be the best interface with the people that have to use that facility. Is that kind of the thought process? Because this is interesting to me, because I just think here's a sign, there's a sign, and no big deal.
You hit it right on the head. What we do is we work with the architect. We work with the client, the owner of the building, for example, in a healthcare facility. We're going to be dealing with all those individuals, and we're going to try to understand who the users are. And basically, we deal with what's the point of arrival when they get there. How are we going to help them navigate throughout the facility? In today's world, that has to be done sometimes in many languages. Recently, we completed a multilingual wayfinding program conversion in 72 sites over in Southern California.
So it's really where you're trying to interact, and I guess the interesting aspect of this as well is you're trying to visualize from the user's perspective how to get through this whole thing and how to make it work without maybe even the building being there at that point, correct?
A lot of times the building's not there. Sometimes it's basically a refurbishment, but we do need to understand, and that's where our research comes into place. We're going to go to a physical facility. We're going to watch the way people engage that from the time they pull onto the site, go into the parking garage, get on foot, and then we're going to be working with the architect and interior designer to bring all those elements together to really make that customer experience better.
Now, traditionally, the new group has a, let's call it a background that going back for a couple of decades at least, and it's been real estate focused. And when we come back from the break, I want you to be able to tell the audience a little bit about how, because first off, if I'm a listener, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, real estate, you guys must be in the tank. But it's very interesting to have you on the program this morning because of the fact that your history says that you should be in the tank, but you've actually been growing rapidly over the past couple of years. So when we come back from the break, kind of give the audience a feel or a flavor of why the new group is not only surviving, but thriving and flourishing in this type of environment. Folks, we've got this morning Paul Whitgay, the founder and CEO of the Alliance of Chief Executives, on the program, along with him Phil Murphy, who is a member of that organization. He's also president and CEO of the New Group in Lafayette, California. Yeah. And it's interesting because the New Group has a traditional history of being involved in the real estate industry. You'd think they would be against the wall, on the floor, on the carpet, on the mat, whatever type of thing that you can think of. But Paul, let's talk a little bit first, though, before we get into the New Group and why they are succeeding. And give us a perspective in your mind of what's happening in real estate and, you know, kind of the lay of the land, because you have this broader viewpoint of the business industry.
Yeah, I'm not an expert in real estate, but what I do, working with CEOs, what I find is that really the great CEOs, in a strange way, actually look forward to downturns, because it's the downturns that really differentiate and clarify the gap between the great companies and just the average companies. And the great companies actually do something different that is a different business model, a better way of doing business, a better customer service, or better products. Frankly, the new group is a great example of how an industry that created signs for many, many, many years, actually the new group, the founders of the new group, created a whole new strategy, a strategic way of finding your way in buildings called wayfinding. And Phil has continued that tradition, and then but also is a great example of preparing his company really well, a stronger culture, a great team, internal processes that are fine-tuned, that when the industry did turn down, they actually benefit from it and are gaining market share. So I'm very interested in hearing more from Phil about how he did that.
So now, Phil, this is the whole chaos is very choppy, very unfortunate, and et cetera, but at the same time, it creates opportunity, the old Chinese proverb of chaos equals opportunity. So obviously, you're a smart business person. You can understand what's happening. You could have done two things. You could have gone into the bunker, which is, what most CEOs do, and just slash and burn and do nothing and wait for, let's call it the big the big weather storm to go by. But instead, you said this is an opportunity. And how does your group do that? How does the new group say, well, we're going to take this and take it, the bull by the horns, and have some fun with it, even though it's a tough environment?
The concept that we've talked about at the new group quite a bit over the last 2 years is we refer to it as the donut concept. If you think of a donut as two big circles.
It's Sunday morning. I'm thinking right now some donut. I'm getting hungry all of a sudden. You've already got piqued my interest here.
Exactly. You got the problems of the world, which are that big circle, and then you've got the little circle, which is the things that you can control. And at the new group, we have two things that we really control. And we began talking about that in 2007, 2008, and 2009. That was a constant discussion. The two things really had one, client service. We had to step it up. We had to really make sure our clients were being taken care of. That allows them to come back and give us repeat business. And we've had an organic growth of about 20% a year just from that. The second thing that we had to do, which again could be in our control, was to go out and be very active in the marketplace, telling our story, reaching out to that community of architects, interior designers that bring work to us, and real estate developers, and tell them what we can do, share with them how we can increase their customer experience.
Now, Phil, that's interesting, because in an environment like this, and the kind of the pervasive viewpoint is people are just hunkering down, they're not making buying decisions. But what you're saying is, regardless of what the mindset is out there, you think it's important to reach out not only to your existing customers, but then to be able to extend the net out into new areas and new people that you don't know. And, you know, let's, you know, from a philosophical standpoint, I can say, yeah, that seems to make a lot of sense, but budgets are tough. So can you give us an example or an idea of how it's gone? Because that's obviously, you know, a leap of faith.
Correct. We set a goal at the start of 2009. We actually made an investment, hired a marketing business development person, set a goal to go out and set up 104 meetings, lunch meetings, which is about two a week, and it's called a lunch and learn, where we would go into an architect's office, buy them lunch, and maybe 5 to 10 to 15 people would show up, and we would have an opportunity for an hour to tell our story. So it gave us an opportunity to get out into the marketplace, and basically people had time to listen. Certainly they have lunch, we're paying for it, and we were able to sit and explain what we do. And from that last year, we actually had 107 of those meetings. We added about 700 people to our database that we now communicate with monthly through an e-blast program. We received work last year from some of those people, which we would not have received had we not done it. And during 2010, we get a call about one call a week right now from individuals that we talked to last year.
So now when you look at that as a CEO versus, and I'll get to the other side of the equation, which obviously is going to be your operations people, whether it's a COO or CFO, they're looking at the hard numbers and just saying, wow, you know, the numbers look different. Maybe we shouldn't do this. So do you look at this as a CEO and say this is a long-term investment? Do you think it's marketing, advertising? Is it sales? What's your mindset when you look at it from the strategic perspective? Is this a long-term investment in the company, almost like a capital outlay?
You know, it's 100% an investment in the company. And entrepreneurs usually manage on that top line. They're thinking about how can I grow it? How can I create sales? Our COO, very talented man, you know, manages the expenses. So you get a kind of a yin and a yang there. And we had that discussion. It was a very real discussion. It went something like, are you crazy? What are you, you're going to do this in a down economy. And my feeling was that was exactly the time to get proactive and get out there in the marketplace. And if you think about it, anytime you see a building being built or a building being renovated, that's a potential client for us. So in my opinion, the risk was pretty minimal if we could get out. And we had a good story to tell. We have a 40-year history of doing some great work for our clients.
Now, that's interesting. At the same time where you were saying that the COO saw it from a completely different viewpoint, how important is that to you as a CEO to have those people that you work with very closely that have the ability to open up to you and say on a very blunt level, hey, this is the way I think? Is that a good gut check for you as a CEO, and do you want to surround yourself with those kind of people that, you know, feel comfortable enough to be able to say right to your face, hey, I don't think that's a good idea?
Gary, we have at the new group what we call the explicit culture, and it's built on three principles, if you will. One is financial transparency. Every year we set our financial goals, revenue, expenses, profit, and every employee is engaged in that conversation. And the engagement is, how are we going to do it? And if we do it, what's in it for them? And for them, they get one-third of the profit. So we're financially transparent. They see our financial statements every month. We have a GNU dashboard where they can be involved and see what we're doing. Number two, we have what we call a workflow process, very process-driven, which means we do a lot of training with our people to make sure that they know exactly what their job is, how to do it, and they've actually been 100% involved in creating those training manuals. And the third thing, which in a design firm is very unique, if you think of designers, they're sensitive people.
Radio people are too, but we won't get into that.
Exactly. They're sensitive people. They take things very personal. So we've spent 8 years with an outside trainer teaching our people to talk openly to each other and to be accountable. So back to the original question, do you want to surround your people, surround yourself with those kind of people? You absolutely do, because this company is not about me. It's about them. We all have to do this together. So during 2009, we started out very strong. Middle of the year, we ran into a problem. Although we had work, we were having difficulty engaging some of that work. It may have been put on hold or clients were making decisions. And we got to a point that maybe we weren't going to make money for a couple months. So we sat down with everybody. We talked about what we could do. Typically, what a company is going to do is lay people off. What we did is we went on a furlough program for every Friday. Individuals were off each week, not paid. However, the management team, which consists of three people plus myself, did take the same pay cut, but we showed up at work every day. The end result of that was by the end of the year, we made more money in 2009 than we did in 2008. They got that furlough money back and actually had about a 14% profit sharing.
So it's working exceedingly well in that example. And just contrast this real quick. We're visiting this morning with Phil Murphy. He's the president and CEO of the New Group in Lafayette, California. Phil, this whole idea of communication, transparency, it seems, at least in my own opinion, to be such a no-brainer that inside of a company, you know, a company should be able to thrive because you're not only surrounding yourself with very good people, but you're also empowering them in that sense. Do you see that, though, as a contrast to many of the other companies that you've either been at previously or that you run into out there in the business world?
I do. I've always been an entrepreneur, so I've never really worked for anybody. But to me...
Congratulations, by the way.
One of the biggest problems right now in today's business world is that employees have some trust issues. They're having difficulty understanding, you know, why am I being let off and different issues like that. So the more we can talk to our people, the more engaged they are. They have some great solutions sometimes. And if you think about the finances of a business, they're just like the finances you and I have as individuals. We take money home, we have expenses, and at the end of the year, you hope we have a little money to save. And the idea at the New Group is to let everybody feel like an entrepreneur. So they share in the successes. And if we have challenges, they have to share in that, and that's what that furlough program was.
Makes a lot of sense, at least in my mind. That's Phil Murphy, the president and CEO of the New Group. Also on the program this morning, Paul Whitgay, the founder and CEO of the Alliance of Chief Executives. And we'll be back in just a moment with more Gary Allen on Business on KNBR 680, the business and sports leader. Now, Phil, just prior to the break, we were talking about this whole idea of a little bit of the management style, how you're really engaging your people, and it is one of those true trade-offs where the employees are able to chip right in, pitch in, give their ideas, try to make the company more successful, and the payoff, of course, is you share the profits, etc. But you live in a very dynamic marketplace. The real estate industry of all different types, signage, etc., it's changing constantly, and your company, the genesis of it, is coming out of the real estate industry itself. How do you try to make sure, though, that you've got the pulse of the marketplace, and how do you make sure that you're able to adjust? Because people often get, complacent if they're very successful in a certain area, and they just ride that ship right over the waterfall and don't even realize what's going on. So how do you stay fresh, and how do you reinvent yourself every so often?
Another great question, Gary. The concept of the real estate market, if you think about it, it's cyclical. It's always changing. And we, because we have a multidisciplined group of people, work in a lot of different real estate markets. For example, healthcare, residential, retail, cities, municipalities, universities, office buildings.
Are you doing those signs, by the way, that I see going up all over the country? It says you know, it just says paid by the reinvestment actor. Have you done any of those signs?
No, but that might be something to look at.
Because it seems that the signs are really the only reinvestment I'm seeing so far. But I'm sorry, that's a different comment. Let's move back to the what we're talking about
this
morning.
That's a good point. So what my job is my job is to continue to have dialogue with our clients, continue to have dialogue with our management team about where's the real estate market going. Here's an example. 3 years ago, it became very obvious that the healthcare market was going to be booming. We have a lot of retrofitting that's going on. New hospitals are being built. And we've worked in that market for years with major players, Kaiser, Sutter, Catholic Healthcare West. We began to shift our emphasis back into that area, bring our thought leadership back into that. And what's really a key to what we bring to the table is we call pain-free project management, meaning you give us the problem, we own it. So we began to move into the healthcare when, by the time we got into healthcare, other markets were closing. Residential, very slow today. Office buildings, you don't see a lot of them being built. Corporate headquarters, they're actually getting smaller, not building new ones. So now we have to begin to look at, as healthcare begins to slow, and it will over a period of time, what's the next step? And we're looking today at repositioning of retail centers, repositioning of office buildings. There's going to be a lot of ownership changes in real estate. Individuals buying buildings for nickels on the dollar, if you will, and they're going to want to reposition those buildings. They're going to want to rebrand them, bring them up to date. Architects will be doing interior design work on it, and will be brought in to do sign programs. So we have to really be looking at that real estate market and saying, where is it changing? And also looking throughout the United States, because we work outside of California, and we've worked internationally in the past. So it's really keeping our radar wide open and saying what's next and then positioning the firm to be ready to act.
Now, for those business people out there listening this morning, can you give us the quick, you know, 1 minute 101 of how do you keep the radar up? In other words, what are some of the things that you do in order to get your pulse on the market? And it may seem very, you know, elementary to you, but there are a lot of business people out there that are maybe just starting out in their business or just trying to figure out how do I get a handle on all of this. So as a business person, when you're trying to determine what is my marketplace today and where is it going in the future, what are some of the things that you do to try to, you know, take your best guess? Because that's all that it is, you know, a good guesswork, but it's an educated guess on where are we going in the future.
Reading business journals certainly is one of the easiest things to do. You can begin to see trends in that. Real estate.
And when
brokers,
you say that, is when you read the you know, the journals, does it mean because you see kind of like a trend of certain articles going in there, so things keep popping up over and over again and that type of thing, or is it just reading the news of what's going on?
No, you're looking for trends. You're looking for real estate brokers, really. These are the guys that drive the activity. They're the guys that are the boots on the ground watching what's happening every day. I try to have lunch with as many of them as I can, have them tell me what's going on. Last Friday, I got a call from a real estate broker who was talking about just what I mentioned a couple minutes ago, repositioning buildings and wanting to introduce us to some of his clients. So they're the people that know what's going. They know what's not working. They know what is working, and you just need to stay focused on that.
Now, Paul, obviously, this doesn't just happen in the New Group's case. Companies are always trying to reinvent themselves or find new marketplaces to go into. What are some of your thoughts of when is the timing right to do something like this? I mean, because one of the things is people are thinking, now the market's not so good, maybe we should hold off. What have you seen that's successful or not successful out there?
The economy is still flowing at $13 trillion a year in the U.S.
And somebody's getting that market,
and
right?
And somebody's getting those revenues. But what happens is it shifts. People buy. All you have to do is look at your own situations, and people are buying fewer new cars. But actually, the used car market and auto repairs are actually going up. People buy less high-priced wine, but they still drink wine. They buy a little less expensive. So you have to be really flexible, adaptable, and observant, and be able to move very quickly and nimbly into finding where the buyers are, where the new markets are, and move faster than your competition. So even in hard-hit industries like real estate, like Phil and the New Group, there's other examples right here in the Bay Area between Zip Realty. It was they created a new model for residential real estate, which has really hit hard. But the downturn actually has helped them differentiate themselves from their competition because they have really leading-edge technology. They created a business model that's better for the homeowners, and so they're actually benefiting from gaining market share in the commercial real estate industry, which is really hard hit. You have firms like Carpenter Robbins, who are proponents and focused totally on the tenants and doing tenant advisory services. And in whenever prices come down, it actually may hurt the sellers, but it helps the buyers. So, you know, you can't have it both ways. You had a guest on your program, David Hayes of Skyline Construction.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about how he had built a great culture and a team similar to the new group. And that industry has been hit very hard, but they've done very well because for the same reasons, the people of the culture there was so strong, and their relationships that they built with their customers differentiated themselves from their competitors. And so in a downturn, that hard work that they put together ahead of time, preparing for the downturn, being a strong company going into it, pays off.
So when I look at that, and this could be a really oversimplification, but if I looked at a marketplace, if I kind of sift through what you were just talking about, it's those companies that really have created the relationships that are going to continue to get the business as the pie shrinks a little bit, and maybe those companies that are on the margins that got some of the business because everybody was so busy that some of it slopped them, those are the companies that are really at risk. Is that not correct?
Exactly. I mean, it's frankly, it's very similar to individuals. Phil mentioned it for his individual employees, but those people who thought the good times would never end and went out and continually refinanced their houses so they had no equity, went and spent their paycheck to paycheck, and didn't really reinvent themselves and continually educate and continue to learn, they were hit the hardest in the downturn. And same with businesses. If the businesses had operated very efficiently and lean and mean during the good times, put cash in the bank, didn't leverage themselves beyond their means, and focused on building deep relationships with their customers, differentiated products or services, they will either suffer less or actually really gain in the downturn.
Now, Paul, I have to ask you, since I've got you here today and you have such a unique look at the business environment here in Northern California just through having access to the wonderful group that you've created, what is your feeling, at least your impression of what you're sensing from your constituency as far as the business climate, what they're thinking about? Is it better, worse than a year ago? And, you know, kind of the general mood. And I know that's all across the board, depending upon who you're talking to, but, you know, just a general sense of what you're feeling.
Yeah, the general mood, first of all, it was about the time your daughter Rachel was born. Just before that, the
and don't economy, say she was the cause of
she
the
was
downturn.
Not the cause. She was afterwards. She was afterwards.
Because I can tell you, she's a stimulant to the economy. Let's just say that
it's been all uphill since then.
That's right.
But it fell off a cliff in about August, September of 2008. There was at least 6 months of just readjusting and then hunkering down a little bit to make certain that whatever programs they should not be in, to just focus on the core. And it's been about a year to get to the bottom. And about Labor Day of last year felt like the bottom to most members, most CEOs in most industries. There's still some sectors that are going to be lagging or leading the economy. But since then, most businesses that I see, and that's across the board, are doing better. The trend has continued in January and February that most businesses are doing better. But there's still an awful lot of caution out there that's so volatile and so uncertain that, frankly, hiring back employees and employment will probably lag the economy, because most CEOs will want to make certain their business is there, that the revenues are going to be sustainable before they start hiring back too many people.
And that, by the way, is not uncommon. That's traditionally a business cycle, is it not? I mean, you go to overtime first and those types of things, and even temporary workers, before you really hire those people long-term. Because who wants to hire someone and then have to fire them 6 months later?
Exactly. And one of the other trends that because of technology and the convergence of communications and computing, in the downturn, when they needed extra people, they could still hire some of the people on a consulting or a contract basis. And they can now work remotely and have access to all the information they had, and do Skype video conferences and so forth. So in hiring back, they're creating a much more virtual and flexible model for many companies. So it's in the industry, when you have a downturn, you don't really see things changing, but they change. And when it comes back out, the business environment or the way we do business has changed, and you don't really know it until all of a sudden you realize it when the good times are coming back.
We're visiting this morning with Paul Wittke. He's the founder and CEO of the Alliance of Chief Executives. And joining us on the program this morning is Phil Murphy, a member of that organization and also the president and CEO of the new group in Lafayette, California. Good morning again, everyone. Gary Allen coming to you live from the studios of KNBR 680 San Francisco. On the program this morning, we have Paul Wittke, the founder and CEO of Alliance of Chief Executives throughout Northern California. That is right. You've got people even up in the Sacramento area. Is that correct? Yes. So it's interesting because with the organization, you've got people up in Sacramento area, you've got people throughout the Bay Area, but you've really kept the focus here, haven't you? I mean, you're not trying to go nationwide with this thing, are you?
No, we actually do have a few members that fly into the Bay Area, but I actually believe the Bay Area is relatively unique. It's the way we think here in the Bay Area, both positive and innovative and creative, is just a unique environment that we're privileged to be part of.
I mean, you don't want to be, you know, have the Alliance of Chief Executives in the Detroit area or something like that. I mean, not to diss Detroit. You can send me the emails and the calls later, but
yeah, probably not until my youngest is out of school, and then we can go crazy.
And they can reinvent themselves. And that's what we were talking about earlier in the program with Phil Murphy, the president and CEO of the new group, is talking about reinventing. But at the same time, you don't lose your culture, right? I mean, you cannot, like, disassociate yourself with the past. There must be some type of thread that goes from the beginning to the end to where, you know, an organization really understands why it's there, and you're trying to continually improve yourself, right? It's not like you're just trying to reinvent yourself. I don't want people to have the wrong idea.
No, you're not changing. I mean, the new group has had a heritage started by Rich Burns over 40 years ago. It really was bringing a top-notch service to the clients, focused in the real estate area, and driven by service. That's what it was all about. So what we're doing today is the technology we use to do our work is very different than when Rich started the business. Our people are very different. They're coming out of school. They need to be trained. They come out as graphic designers. So we're doing different things the way we're dealing with our people. Certainly this financial transparency, that was a model that we started 9 years ago. And we felt that was the right thing to position us for the future. The training programs we do, we felt that that's absolutely necessary for us to be able to move from market to market. But our core is still built around three principles, which is thought leadership, bringing the best thoughts to our clients, bringing all the information we can bring to increase their customer experience. Certainly Creative Design Solutions being a design firm. And pain-free project management, that has been a shift. We've really realized now that what clients want is to turn the ball over to you and have you get the job done. They don't want you to be pointing fingers. They want you to own it and take care of it. And if you think about it, all of us go back and go to the same restaurant, take our clothes to be cleaned, have people come do work at our house that give us a good experience. I mean, that's what we're about. So if we continue to focus on that and continue to recognize that that experience changes from time to time, I think we're going to be successful in the future.
Well, that's interesting, too, because you talked about doing different things but holding on to that core. But on the other side of the equation, you have the clients, the customers. How have they changed? How are they different? What are they asking you to do that maybe you never thought about before? And how do you adapt as an organization? Because we all know as business people that our clients can probably ask us for too much. So how do you deliver those deliverables to them and the promises, but at the same time not going overboard so that you're no longer in business?
Certainly in our business, we sell time. That's what we do. People come to us. They ask us what it's going to cost to do an assignment. We give them a number, not like attorneys. We just don't bill on the hour. We actually have a limit to what we can charge you. So we're being challenged every day by our clients to get those fees as lean as we can. In return, there is education you can bring to the client and say, instead of us getting in a car and driving an hour down to San Jose to meet, we can do that through a telecom. We can send through things over electronically in the computer. So anytime the client comes to you, you have to look at that and say, how can I respond to their needs, yet at the same time, be a profitable business? Because if we're not going to be around to take care of their needs.
Now, Paul, is that something that is typical across the board when we have these types of times that companies are having to respond to their clients who are obviously wanting them to do more for them? And are you seeing that same type of response from CEOs, et cetera, that you know, you have that balance in essence of being able to deliver, but at the same time, you can't go overboard.
I think any company that doesn't pay attention to their customers is going to be in trouble. So
bingo.
You really have to listen to them, but also be careful not to go overboard in a way that you aren't capable of delivering, to stay focused on what you really do well, but be flexible to look for those opportunities where you can do more than what you're doing currently. Yes.
Now, when we look at the group that you have with all the disparate CEOs from so many different businesses, you've got all these different egos, because typically CEOs are driven people. And when I say egos, I mean that in the positive sense, not the negative sense that most people have, I think, of an ego-driven environment. How dynamic of an environment can you create in the organization when you bring in a group of these CEOs together to talk about their businesses? Is it pretty passionate, and is it a neat experience? In other words, I'm trying to give people a little bit of the what's happening behind the curtains at the Alliance.
Yeah, thanks for asking, because frankly, I love what I get to do. I am so honored and privileged to work with the people I get to work with. These, if there's one thing that is common among CEOs, whether it's the small private companies struggling to survive and make a living, or the global billion-dollar enterprises that are creating some of the world's most incredible technology, they are all passionate people.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's what I mean by ego, in the sense that, you know, you've got to have that vision and be very sure of yourself. And to me, I think ego, in the sense, we always look at the negative aspect of it. And I think you have to have an ego to be able to survive, because you're gonna get a lot of arrows when you're in this business.
But I think where the misperception is when the media talks about ego in CEOs, they think about Donald Trump or somebody that has a huge ego and wants to be famous and wants people to know he's rich, whereas frankly, what I see for most of the CEOs I work with, particularly here in the Bay Area, their passion is not for being famous. Their passion is for making a difference. They're trying to cure cancer. They're trying to create new technology. They're trying to create jobs. They are creating unique ways of doing business. They're passionate about their culture, like Phil is, about creating a stable, sustainable environment that matches a great place to work for his people. He's sharing profits, along with really making a difference for his customers in a different way. So when you bring passionate people like that together that actually have a really strong sense of humility, that they know, they frankly have a greater sense of what they don't know than most people. They, you know, a lot of people don't know what they don't know. A really great CEO understands what they don't know, and they constantly strive to continually learning all those things that they don't currently know. And it's a never-ending process.
Now, in the current populist environment, if you want to call it that, CEOs, amongst many other types of people, have been given the almost like a scarlet letter. There's something wrong, right? I mean, how, in your own personal opinion, how negative is that? Because I can tell you from my opinion, you know, being a CEO type myself, we are the people that employ all these folks. And we try to do our best to be the best employer that we can. I mean, I hope that all of our employees really like what we do in our own company. How difficult and how unfair in that sense, and I don't want to make this an anti-populist thing, but in other words, isn't it just misdirected in most cases that it's not healthy for the system?
Absolutely. I mean, it's in every industry, every walk of life, there's a few bad apples, and the media does focus on those that are getting outrageous payoffs and do bad things, but they're just a few. The CEOs that I meet and get to know, they're just solid the earth people that are either great at some technology, and they bring people together to serve a purpose, to pursue a mission and make a difference out there. And they really aren't doing it for fame or fortune. They need to make certain the company is profitable so they can build sustainable jobs and stay there for their companies. But I am honored to work with the people I get to work with and that help create this economy that we're talking about here today.
Well, I'm honored to have had both of you on the program this morning. First, Phil Murphy, the president and CEO of the New Group in Lafayette. And, Phil, if people would want to know more information about your company, what's the best way for them to find out about you?
They can go to our website, www.gnugroup.com, or certainly give us a call directly in Lafayette, California.
And Paul, if people would like to find out more about the Alliance, if they're a CEO, if they own a business, if they are interested in finding out about your organization, how would they go about doing that?
Yeah, they can find us on the web at alliance of CEOS.com, or just simply call us at 925-942-2400. I'd be happy to talk with them.
Gentlemen, been a pleasure to have you on a Sunday morning, and thanks for sharing part of your weekend with us. You've been listening to Gary Allen on Business on KNBR 680, the business and sports leader.